The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition this week. We've got a special show for you today. We've got Peter Scott right before he officially retires, available for a show. So we took advantage of that opportunity, brought Peter in so that we can talk a bit about CRTs, Charitable Remainder Trusts, which we've talked about a bit on the show before. But we've had a series of questions from folks lately, so we thought we'd get Pete in to kind of deal with those questions as an EDU show. Even though it's question-based today, we're going to consider it an EDU show because it's a focused topic today, specifically charitable remainder trusts, how they work, why one might want to consider using them, what they can do, what they can't do, etc. So Jim's here too, by the way. So hi, Jim.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can. You're a little distorted, so maybe turn your dial down just a little bit or just keep your mouth a little farther away from the mic. You just came in a little hot there.
How am I now?
That's perfect. Just don't move your face any closer. So, welcome, Pete.
Thank you. It's good.
You can see,
it's good to
you can
be
see
here.
The production value of the show hasn't really changed in all the time you've been on.
It's a very high level that I remember.
Kind of fly by the seat of our pants here.
That makes it fun.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for coming in.
Sure.
It's been
quite a while.
It's been too long, Pete.
Yes, it has. But so, this may be my swan song. So.
Well, no, now you're going to have a lot more time on your hands that you're officially going to retire. You can be in here all the time.
I don't think that's going to work that way. But thanks.
You're always welcome here. The door is always open here.
Well, I might come in just to harass Jim, but other than that.
That's very welcomed as well. So.
Yeah, he did tell me at lunch. Can you hear me? Because I'm wicked far away from the mic.
Yeah.
No, you can get a little closer.
Am I too close?
That's fine right there.
Okay.
Just don't get too excited and dive into the microphone.
All right. Pete did tell me at lunch that this would be it, folks. He doesn't think he'll come on the show anymore. Mostly, Pete, because you're not doing your continuing in ed anymore, and you're not keeping up to date on everything.
Well, that's right.
And he feels a little uncomfortable coming in, which we fully support.
Don't want to give any wrong answers.
That is correct. Spoken like a true attorney.
I can give you an unqualified maybe on that.
So we're going to pick his brain as best we can for CRTs today, and then we will get a new Pete. We have a couple of new Petes who came on the show in the past. We will keep working until we get a new Pete, or until I can get Pete lick it up enough where I can get him on the show.
That would be interesting.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, Chris?
No, I don't think so. You've got the questions. You have me at a disadvantage because I haven't seen them, but you're going to lay them on Pete, and I'll just stand aside and watch the glorious answers flow like we're used to.
Well, folks, what we're doing is we did get a lot of estate planning-related questions in. As I said, I reached out to Pete recently, and he offered to come in and answer some. So I thought we would do because we got a lot of questions on CRT, charitable remainder trusts. Maybe we'll do a show kind of dedicated to CRTs, but addressing these particular questions. Some of them were quite good and interesting, and I thought people could benefit from some of the questions that were being asked and the concepts of the answers when they're provided. But before we begin, I want Pete to take some time, and why don't you just kind of go over, Pete, the basics of a CRT, a charitable remainder trust. Okay. And a lot of our listeners, Pete, come across CRTs either from listening to our show, or most of our listeners are what we call do-it-yourselfers. They're Vanguardians, if you will. They manage their own assets, most likely at Vanguard. They're passive investors, low-cost passive investors. They do it all on their own, and they come across all this news, Pete, of the demise of the Stretch IRA. Stretch IRA is gone. These people are worried at their passing and when their children inherit their assets. There's going to be a big tax nightmare for those children because they have to close the IRA within 10 years of the passing of the owner. And all that money, as we've said repeatedly, folks, on this podcast, you do-it-yourselfers, you may see assets inside that Vanguard IRA of yours. You may be managing assets inside that Vanguard IRA of yours. But the IRS views your IRA as what, Chris?
IRD. You're just testing IRD. Me to make sure I'm paying attention, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. I'm keeping you awake. Income with respect to a decedent, folks, we say this all the time, your IRA is income. Even though you see an asset, even though you have it invested in an asset, whether it is a index fund or an ETF at Vanguard, you think it's an investment, the IRS looks at it as income. And they're going to treat it as income, and they're going to tax it as income. So it has all these unique rules. One of the things you used to be able to do is stretch out the payment of that income from your IRA at your death. Your beneficiary would be able to stretch out the payment. So we're talking non-spouse beneficiaries here. Your children would be able to stretch out those payments over the rest of their lives, but now they have to close it within 10 years. They don't have to take anything out for the first 9 years, but in that 10th year, they have to close the entire IRA by the end of the 10th year following your death. For the most part, that's what nearly everyone will fall into. Well, Pete, with that in mind, a lot of our listeners are turning to strategies like the CRT that they hear about on our show or read over the internet on how a CRT could be a substitute, if you will, to the Stretch IRA. So on today's show, that's the approach I want you to take, Pete. I want you to treat today's topic and the use of a CRT, even though it could have other purposes and other uses in estate planning, that's the main one that we want to focus on, how a CRT could be used to replicate the old Stretch IRA. Not perfectly. There's going to be pros and cons, and that's what I'll let you get into. But why don't you take some time now and explain the CRT and how it could be a substitute for the previous Stretch IRA?
Okay. Well, the Charitable Remainder Trust is a product or created by the Internal Revenue Code. So this is not some scheme or strategy putting together several code sections and trying to make something work. It's all laid out in the Internal Revenue Code, and they've been around for, gosh, I don't know, quite a few years. And the concept is that a donation, say an IRA in this case, at the owner's death, passes into a charitable remainder trust. And the charitable remainder trust is a charity. So as a consequence, there's an offsetting charitable deduction. So at their death, the value of the IRA is included in their estate for estate taxes, which is not that big a concern at the moment. And then there's an offsetting deduction against that inclusion. So basically, it's not included within the estate because it's going to a charity, the charity being the Charitable Remainder Trust. And like its name applies, it says that at the end of the life of the trust, what's left in that charitable remainder trust will pass to a charity. But prior to that, there could be a lifetime beneficiary, typically a child or children, that can benefit from the lifetime income. And there are basically two types of charitable remainder trust as we're talking about it in this context: charitable unit trust and a charitable annuity trust, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But basically, there's an amount that is paid out each year to the lifetime beneficiaries, and usually they'll run for the life of the children. And at the end of their lives, then what is left in that trust passes to the charity. The charitable remainder trust, because it is a charity, can pull all of the funds out of the IRA, continue their investment as they did before, but because it's a charity, there is no tax impact on pulling the funds out of the IRA. The distributions, however, to the children, in our example, would be subject to income tax primarily, because the character of the distributions out of the IRA when it's liquidated then carry through and attach to the distributions. So the children would be paying income tax on those distributions, just like they would with a stretch. Mm-hmm. The difference is with a stretch IRA, at the end of the children's lives, then that, depending on what, if they, well, let's just make it simple. At the end of their lives, then the money remaining could carry on and be passed on down. With a charitable remainder trust, it cannot. So whoever is named as the lifetime beneficiary, when they're all gone, then what's left goes to the charity. And that's, I don't know, Chris, if you have anything to add to that, but that's as simple as
that. No, I think it's good. And one thing I don't want to skip over quite yet, I know that Jim wanted you to focus on comparing it to the old stretch IRA, stretching out those distributions over the beneficiary's lifespan. You mentioned something I think that's an important, will become important to people as a beneficial side effect to this. If the main purpose is trying to create the stretch for your kids, which is now gone, using this technique and with the CRT, the side effect benefit I'm referring to is that exclusion of the IRA monies that are left to the CRT, exclusion from your estate. You did say, which is, I totally agree with, right now it's not a big issue for people because the estate exclusion amount is so very high, but we believe in the not too distant future that's going to start to erode and be drawn back down. To what level, we don't know, but a lot of people who are looking to leave a fair amount of money to kids in a retirement account are also those who might be risking or exposed to the potential of estate taxes down the road. So this is, you kind of have a two bonuses or two benefits that we're talking about here, that exclusion effect by naming the CRT that excludes it. Well, it doesn't technically exclude it, but it's an offsetting deduction. And then the stretch effect that you get spreading out the tax impacts for your kids, most likely, or whatever beneficiaries you've named.
Correct. Good. Thanks.
Sure.
Jim, back to you.
Yeah. So what I want to do is just kind of explain from a layman's standpoint, folks, what Pete just said. So how this would all work, keep in mind, it's... today's show is talking about a CRT in the context of a replacement for the stretch IRA. So a lot of the people out there listening, and I know you exist because you've contacted you've contacted our office, you've contacted our show in the past by writing to us. I think you would say, Chris, it's a safe assumption. Many people out there do not have good tax diversification, and a lot of their money is in always taxable IRAs. What would you say about that?
Yes, I think there's a lot of people who have done a good job of amassing wealth or an nest egg for retirement. They just did it in a very focused, a tax-focused manner, putting all their tax eggs in one basket by having practically everything within tax-deferred, what we call always taxable, referring to the treatment as they come out of those accounts, but these tax-deferred traditional retirement accounts like 401ks and IRAs, kudos to you for building up a really big balance there. But now you're, you know, on the hook for taxes, possibly extreme taxes compared to what you might have been expecting, just because of the sheer size of these accounts. So yes, that has happened more often than hopefully in the future people will get the message that they should be creating some tax diversification for themselves, instead of just piling it up in one tax consequence account or one type of tax consequence and spreading it out between other resources.
Exactly. So if you're out there and you have millions of dollars in your IRAs or 401ks, what we call always taxable accounts, this strategy is something you may want to pay attention to. If you don't have a significant amount of your assets in always taxable accounts, if you have a few hundred thousand dollars, half a million, 300,000, 800,000, I'm not saying you couldn't benefit or your beneficiaries couldn't benefit from a CRT strategy, but I don't think it is an ideal strategy in that case. There may be other ways of mitigating the tax issues that your beneficiaries will have when they inherit your always taxable accounts. Today's show is really geared to those of you who have amassed 70, 80, 90% of your assets in always taxable IRA, 401k, TSP, 403b style accounts. Accounts whose withdrawals will always be taxable. Hence, Chris and I call them always taxable accounts. It's really geared to people, in my opinion, several million in them, maybe less if it's truly important to you. Would you agree on that, Pete? Or in your practice before you retired, did you see people with a few hundred thousand in their IRAs also using a CRT strategy for one reason or another?
Not very often. The advantage, the cost benefit ratio was not high enough for them to use it, unless they were really charitably inclined and the focus was really more on the charity than it was on tax benefits.
Correct. So I do want to kind of set the stage of who may benefit most from this show and the strategy. The other thing that I want you to understand is conceptually what we're talking about here. Let's just say, Chris, someone has two children, and let's make them twins so we don't get too difficult with different life expectancies. Let's say two twins, and when they pass away, their children are 60 years old, okay? Mm-hmm. So if, or let's just say the children are 59 years old when they pass away, under the old rules where the stretch used to exist, the children would look at their age in the year after death. So that makes them 60. So the year after they inherited the IRA, the year after the parent passed, they turned 60. Under the old rules, they would be able to keep that IRA open. Those twins could keep the IRA open for 25 years.
Right.
25.2 years, if you want to be technical, but we'll call it 25 years. A quarter of a century. Mm-hmm. And what they would have to do is divide that IRA in the first year, the value of the IRA, by 25, the next year by 24, the next year by 23. So you see, each year the divisor gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. And they used to divide the December 31st value of the IRA by that divisor. And that's how much they had to take out every year. Mm-hmm. So you could see, Chris, a 60-year-old could keep the IRA open for 25 years and spread the taxes out over 25 years. That was the concept behind the stretch. And that never was the rule. The rule used to be a 5-year rule. The second Bush administration changed that rule in 2000, I believe it was. And then the stretch IRA was born. And Chris and I predicted almost immediately when we started doing the podcast, going back a decade now, that someday that will go away because it's a revenue raiser to get rid of it. And it did. went away with the Secure Act that was passed in 2000. And then all of a sudden, the
2020, not 2000.
That's 2000.
Pardon me, what?
Oh, no. You're right. I had 122 less.
Yes, exactly. Just want to keep the facts straight here.
Yeah,
so
okay.
2020, January 1st of 2020 is when it went into effect, the Secure Act.
Well, everyone listening to this knows they're supposed to listen to what I want to say, not what I actually
exactly.
say.
That's a prerequisite to the show.
Definitely is on this show. Okay. So what I'm getting at, folks, when the new rules passed in 2020, that same 60-year-old inheriting, say, a $2 million IRA must close it within 10 years. And it gets even worse if death happened earlier for the parents. What if they passed away when their children were 40 years old? Well, a 40-year-old under the old rules could have kept the IRA open for 43.6 years. Let's just call it 44 years. That's a long time. But now they'd have to close it within 10 years. So with the death of the stretch, a real, desire for people with these large IRAs, which are large income sources. You may see assets, but your kids are inheriting income. It is income that you earned but have never been taxed on it. In the eyes of the IRS, that's what it is. They call it income with respect to a decedent. Even though you see an asset, the IRS sees income, and that whole Vanguard IRA of yours, that $2 million Vanguard IRA, is $2 million of earnings that have never been taxed. And they want to tax it at not capital gains rates. They want to tax it at income tax rates. So a whole cottage industry is creeping up of how can we get this stretch? How can we replicate this so our kids aren't hit with having to close a, in my example, $2 million IRA in 10 years? In other words, taking out $200,000 a year for 10 years or $2 million in any 1 year. That's going to really get hit with income taxes at the federal and state level. How can we spread that out? Well, the theory behind it, as Pete said, is you take that IRA, and even though it's income, you're allowed to leave it to a charity tax-free. It will be income tax-free to the charity. And Pete, I believe what Chris was explaining, and correct me if I'm wrong, it will be estate tax-free as well. Not that that's an issue now, but it could be in the future. If you left a $2 million IRA to a CRT, that $2 million IRA would not go on your estate tax return, or do I have that wrong?
Well, the technical part of it you have wrong, but the net effect is it's not included in the estate for tax purposes.
So it would be on the return, but then have a subsequent deduction taking
Correct.
It off the return?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. So it'll go on your return, folks, but then right below it, you subtract it out, the value out because of a deduction. So effectively, it won't be subject to estate taxes either. Whereas an IRA under the old stretch rules or under the new stretch rules, which just happen to be 10 years, will be included in your taxable estate for estate tax purposes. But if you took that $2 million IRA, left it to a charitable remainder trust, that $2 million is out of your estate for estate tax purposes. Now, Pete, why don't you get into a little of the nuance of how it would work? We just got $2 million into a CRT that are going to be inherited. Do you want to make our beneficiaries, Pete, 40 years old or 60 years old, or does it not matter in any example you're going to give?
Well, since we're not running numbers on it, I don't think that it matters a whole lot. It just dictates the length of the charitable remainder trust and the payout rate, which we'll come to and explain in a minute.
Okay, so do you want to make them 40 or 60, Pete?
Pete.
Chris, I had it right.
Chris?
No, I was trying to say Chris, but I almost said Pete. At least I didn't say piss like I did.
Well, I heard it almost come out there, though.
It did not come out as piss. I said p, and then I went to is. There was definitely a pause a in between gap. Those two. Chris, do you have a preference?
Let's make him 40.
Okay. So, Pete, in this example, we have a parent who dies. Let's say it's the last parent, so there's no spousal beneficiary. Parent dies. Children of 40. We got twins to keep things easy so we don't have different life expectancies. And $2 million goes into a CRT. Before we get into the charity and the naming of the charity and all that, let's just skip that part. The charity has been named. We'll address that in a second. Why don't you explain the math behind what the trustee is going to start doing. Now there is 2 million folks that gets paid out of the IRA. It is removed from the IRA. The IRA is closed. $2 million comes out of the IRA, $2 million of income in the eyes of the IRS, $2 million of Vanguard ETFs for all you do-it-yourself Vanguardians is coming out of your IRA and going into a CRT. So why don't you explain what happens next? Who is the trustee of the CRT? Is the family still involved somewhere as the trustee? Who handles the investments? Is it the trustee or does the deceased parent set who handles the investments? And ultimately, how do they decide how much is paid to the children over their remaining life expectancy, which is the hope of the CRT? Walk someone through what you would do if you were still working. I know you're going to pull out Steve Lineberg's number cruncher. That's the software we all use for this, you do-it-yourselfers. So I know you're going to be pulling out number cruncher, but what are you doing behind the scenes?
Well, what we have to do is start before that, and that is the terms of the charitable remainder trust are going to be laid out in the parents, the deceased parents' will or trust. So it's probably going to be a formula since no one really knows when they're going to die, or very few of us do. So the age of the children will be different as time goes on, the longer the parent lives. And that's one of the factors that's going to determine how much can be paid out of that charitable remainder trust each year to the kids. So we'll have a formula, the fixed terms of which are what's called the 75-20 rate. This is an interest rate that's published by the IRS each month that determines what discount rate you're applying to the calculation of the remainder interest. So what we have to do, and this is done internal to the charitable remainder trust by the trustee, and I'll come back to the trustee in just a minute. So we use, as Jim likes to say, number cruncher to plug in the ages of the kids or the age of the child, and then the 75-20 rate is calculated or entered. And then we look at the life expectancy for the child, and then that's going to tell us what we call the payout rate. That is the percentage of the principal value of the charitable remainder trust that can be paid out each year to the child or the beneficiary. And then that will continue for the remainder of their life. And the limiting factor in that is there has to be at least an actuarial value to the remainder interest of 10%. In other words, the IRS wants to ensure that there, at least under today's calculations, that there will be a minimum of 10% available at the end of these 40, 45 years available to the charity. That doesn't mean that there has to be. That means just the calculation on the front end has to result in at least a 10% remainder interest. You can have more of a remainder interest by putting in a lower payout rate, but nonetheless, it can't be less than 10% remainder.
Pete, can I interrupt and ask one question?
Sure.
That some people might be thinking? So what you're describing means on the day the trustee is pulling this all together or has hired someone such as yourself to help them pull this all together, and you're using number cruncher and getting all this set, on that day, actuarially speaking, based on the estimated life expectancy of the twin beneficiaries, if everything worked perfectly, 10% of the essentially the IRA value, so about $200,000 out of the $2 million that went into the CRT. Actuarially speaking, on day one, if everything flowed perfectly and the two kids died, there would be $200,000 left in the CRT, and that goes to charity, correct?
Correct.
But if things don't go as planned, there could be significantly more left. In other words, the children die sooner than life expectancy. Or if the kids live longer, there could be significantly less than $200,000. And they don't have to make the difference up. Correct, or am I off somewhere?
No, you're correct. It doesn't matter how it ends up. It's just on day one, from the actuarial calculations, there has to be at least a 10% projected remainder.
Perfect. You can continue.
Okay. And let me add to that is, in addition, another variable is the actual interest rate that can be, or dividends or investment return that can be made on the investments in the charitable remainder trust. Because the calculation assumes that the 75-20 rate, that is the interest rate that the IRS uses, is assumed to be static throughout the term of the charitable remainder trust, the 45 years or so. And we know that that's not going to be the case. So it could vary, and that's going to affect the remainder interest. So then back to the trustee, the decedent, that is the parent, in establishing the trust in their will or their trust, will name the trustee. It can be a family member, and there are certain restrictions because of the self-dealing restrictions on the trustees, but it can be a family member. And I think everyone I've done is I've made the trustee a family member, but then had a provision, which is allowed, to appoint an independent trustee on any sort of conflict decisions that the trustee would need to make. Generally, if it's investments from an IRA, you're not going to have that as an issue. It's where you have closely held businesses or real estate that was owned by the decedent going in. That sort of thing could create a problem, but you'd need an independent trustee. But for the most part, IRA assets are not going to do that. Maybe self-directed IRA assets may, but generally the Vanguard-type IRAs aren't going to be a problem with a conflict. So you have the child could be the trustee of their trust. You could have a third party. You could have a professional trustee. If you have an individual trustee, and this is something I always insist on, if I have a family member as a trustee, I insist that they hire a professional administrator for the trust. That person or that company keeping a close eye on what the assets are invested in, and also making sure that the tax returns for the trust itself are filed, disclosures, distributions are made, all the compliance issues that normally are beyond the expertise of an individual trustee. So you pay that administration company an annual fee to take care of all that. Then the trustee can determine the investments, but there are certain investments that are not allowed because this is a charity, so they're prohibited investments for a charity. Generally speaking, the assets that someone has their IRA invested in are not going to be a problem. They tend to be publicly traded and certainly available. So again, it's in those rare occasions when someone's trying to put a personal asset in or wanting to invest in something a little more high risk that it might be an issue with regard to failing to comply with the requirements for the investments. I don't know. Anything else, Jim, on that?
No. That's perfect. So let's continue with this then. Can you give an idea what would happen in certain situations? So could there be an age? And I think when we had you on the podcast last year, sometime, it might even been the year before, you said something that I didn't know about CRTs. And you said that correct me if I misunderstood you, that if the beneficiaries were very young, and you said pretty much younger than 40, the payouts won't last for the rest of their lives. It would be probably for, I think you said, 20 years. Can you explain a little bit behind that, or did I not quite understand that correctly?
Well, you're on target with that. The CRT does not work because of the 10% remainder requirement. If you have a very young beneficiary, And the minimum, by the way, the minimum payout rate has to be 5%. That's set in the Internal Revenue Code. And with someone very young, when you look at their life expectancy and then figuring out, well, and the interest rate, the 75-20 rate, then what can you make the payout rate be in order to assure the 10% at the end of the term? And that might be 60, 70 years. Well, it's going to be well under 5%, which fails that requirement in order to assure the 10% remainder interest requirement. I had said, I think I did say 40. I ran calculations on one of these questions, and someone had a 38-year-old, and it did pass the 10% test at a rate over 5%. So it may be 30 would be the minimum age that would actually the numbers would work on, and it would be a 5% payout rate, and then over the life expectancy of that 30-year-old is my guess. Does that help?
So what would we do, Pete, in a situation where we had a younger beneficiary? Is this going to be a viable strategy? Let's pretend that the beneficiary is 20, not 40 or 60. So let's say the person with the $2 million IRA has unfortunately been diagnosed with a condition that is going to give them a shortened life expectancy, and they're worried about a 20-year-old inheriting a $2 million IRA. And obviously trying to create a discretionary trust to be beneficiary of that IRA to help protect the money for the 20-year-old under a variety of tax rules. It's not going to work. There's going to be a lot of loss in taxes. So someone might think, okay, why don't I do a CRT and I can put the $2 million in a charitable remainder trust and pay it out over that 20-year-old child of mine's life. In other words, give them a little bit of money every year to help them out, but not so much money that they can blow it or not try to become a productive member of society. What you're saying is because that 20-year-old is too young, it may not work. Could there be a way of saying, or is the math such that the CRT would still work? It just wouldn't work for life. It would work for a period of years instead? Or does it just not work for very young beneficiaries?
Well, yeah, directly with the young child as a beneficiary, it will not work because of the 10% remainder requirement. However, these charitable remainder trusts can be set up for a term of years that doesn't depend on life expectancy. Mm. The maximum term is 20 years. So in your example, your 20-year-old, and I like the way you laid that out because the 20-year-old would not qualify. However, if the charitable remainder trust were set up for a 20-year term, the max term, then it would qualify using the calculation we talked about. And rather than having that distribution each year go to the 20-year-old, which would be fairly substantial on a $2 million IRA spread out over 20 years with the payout rate if you maxed it out, they could go into, as you said, a discretionary trust for the benefit of the 20-year-old. So while the charitable remainder trust is allowing the distributions from the IRA to be distributed out over a 20-year term, it would not go into the pocket of the 20-year-old, but into a trust for the benefit of the 20-year-old. And all of that works because the trust, not being a person with a life expectancy, cannot use a life expectancy and must use a term of years, 20 years being the max. So that would work quite well, and at least it would mitigate some of the taxes, not as much as if you could stretch it out, in this case, not using the IRA stretch, but stretch out the distributions over the life expectancy. But that's not available because of the 10% remainder requirement. So 20-year term paid to a discretionary trust, and then, of course, the discretionary trust could run well beyond the 20 years before all that money was distributed, if it were ever distributed all to the 20-year-old.
But, Pete, once that money comes out of the CRT and heads to that discretionary trust, though, aren't you going to run into a pretty scary tax situation because the discretionary trust holding that in there is going to be paying income taxes at trust rates? And if you've got, you know, $100,000 coming out every year, which is about what, you know, that or more with a $2 million IRA over a 20-year period, you're going to have a lot exposed to the highest marginal tax bracket, aren't you?
Absolutely, you are. So you have to, as the parent, you have to weigh what is more detrimental, putting $100,000 into the pocket of a 20-year-old each year, or giving the government, let's just use a I don't think the $100,000 maxes out at, well, in the trust it does, it maxes out. And then each year the trust, as it makes distributions to the child, it'll get an offsetting deduction against that year's income for the distribution. You could mitigate some of that, but certainly the tax impact in the first year would be probably, well, I don't know, not necessarily. You could distribute some of it out. You could mitigate it somewhat. But Chris, you're absolutely right, because anything above, I don't know, about around $13,000 now of income in a trust is going to be taxed at the highest marginal rate, which currently is, what is it, 39.9% or something.
Yeah, so that'd be a pretty expensive choice.
Right, but that we were going to be faced that either way, Chris. I see where Pete is going with this as a potential strategy. What I'm just trying to point out is the CRT may not work for beneficiaries younger than 40, although Pete said one of the questions we're going to get to was a 38-year-old beneficiary, and the math did work. But as your beneficiaries get above 40, I think the CRT is a wonderful strategy, because then we can do the stretch out over their remaining life expectancy. But for beneficiaries younger than 40, and especially teens and 20s and probably early 30s, I think what you're saying, Pete, is you could stretch out over 10 years, which is what the new rule is, or stretch it out over 20 years. It buys you 10 extra years, if you will. So instead of having to take $200,000 out every year for 10 years, not remember, folks, under the new 10-year payout, you don't have to take anything out each year. But if you wanted to take an even amount out every year at face value to liquidate a $2 million IRA under the 10-year rule, you'd have to liquidate $200,000 a year. Now, granted, growth or losses could change that, but let's just look at its most simplistic level. $200,000 a year for 10 years. Under this strategy, you could take out $100,000 a year for 20 years, Chris. So you're still going to have $100,000 going into the discretionary trust for the benefit of the 20-year-old, which anything above $12,700 is going to be taxed at the highest effective marginal rate in existence at that time. So Lord only knows what that will be in the future. You could distribute some of that money, though, some of the $100,000 to the child for certain purposes. And that trust could be set up, could it not, Pete, that money gets distributed directly, say, to pay for college or to do other things. So some money in the discretionary trust could be distributed and taxed at the child's rate, Chris, which would be much lower. But anything held, you are correct, Chris. It will be taxed at a very high rate. It's just that the gross distribution, $100,000 over 20 years instead of $200,000 over 10 years, would by itself help reduce some of the taxes owed. Right. Worst case scenario is the discretionary trust for the benefit of the kid holds everything because the kid is incapable of receiving the money for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. So it holds it all. Worst case scenario is having to pay taxes on $100,000 over 20 years or $200,000 over 10. I don't know which one is going to be better or worse. I think what I'm trying to describe, though, is the CRT may not be a viable strategy for beneficiaries younger than 40. And that's right. What I was trying to convey. Yep. Would you agree, Pete, and maybe other strategies would be used for beneficiaries younger than 40?
Yes. I once you run the numbers, it'll become pretty clear that this is either a viable choice or it's not.
Okay, so that kind of lays out, folks, hopefully a little bit of the basics, very, very little of the basics. There's a lot of nuances to these that Pete hasn't gotten into, but it gives you an idea of what it does. But if you have beneficiaries older than 40 and you want to kind of spread out the taxation to them especially if they have assets of their own, they have a successful job, they're productive members, having to deal with a big inheritance and closing it in 10 years and having to pay taxes on it, especially if they themselves are in relatively high brackets, could be disruptive. And this is just one way of paying a little steady income to them every year. At the end of the term, though, remember, you have to have a charitable inclination, because when the children pass away, and in my example, we had two twins who were 40 years old, doesn't mean they're going to live a full life expectancy and pass away in their late 80s, early 90s. They could both pass away in 10 years if something were to happen. When the two beneficiaries, in my example, pass away, whatever is left in that trust, Pete, not just the 10% they were promised, but anything in it goes to the named charity, correct?
Correct.
So you have to be charitably inclined also, folks. You might be able to get the stretch, but you got to be charitably inclined. Now, one unique thing, the charity that ultimately inherits the money in the charitable remainder trust could be a donor-advised fund that you set up yourself. And for all you Van Goghians, Vanguard has a donor-advised program, Fidelity does, a lot of the big custodians and fund firms all have their own donor advised funds, and we're not going to turn this into a donor advised fund show, but what it allows you to do is put money in, and then your family members, your children, your grandchildren, your great grandchildren could become, I don't want to say trustees, but kind of overseers of your little fund. And they can gift money every year based on parameters you set up. Maybe you're I don't want to say physician. Remember, we had a mechanic want us to use blue-collar workers. So maybe you are a mechanic and you want to help the mechanic school that you went to become very successful and amassed millions of dollars. So you create a donor advised fund that you want your family to participate in, but you specify the family every year can get involved and give scholarships to students who want to be mechanics based on these metrics of what the student can do or what their dreams are or what their personal situation is. You get the picture, folks. You could drill down a donor advised fund to that level, where you specify who gets the money and when, under what circumstances, and you could keep your family involved. You can say my children and my grandchildren can serve on the board who gives this money away every year. Or you can make it a very easy donor advised fund. My kids can give anything they want away to charity anytime they want until there's no money left in the donor advised fund. What I'm getting at is the money in the charitable remainder trust doesn't have to go directly to a charity and is out of your family control, so to speak. It can actually help keep your family involved in charitable giving. Maybe you're very religious and you want to help your church and tithe 10% a year from your charitable remainder trust, but you also want to help church members who want to go on, what do they call it when they go preach? What do they call those things?
You mean missions? On a mission trip.
Missions, mm-hmm. Thank you. A mission. And do that, or whatever the case may be, or you want to help. Maybe there's a school associated with that church. What I'm saying is you can leave the money in that charitable remainder trust to a donor-advised fund that can keep your family involved. Your family can't get the money and benefit from it anymore, but they can get the emotional benefit, folks, of being charitably inclined, being involved in some type of ongoing fund, ongoing donor-advised fund, family giving program that you helped fund. So do keep that in mind. It doesn't have to be given to a charity and totally paid out and removed from the family. It's just not going to the primary income beneficiaries anymore because they passed away. And it's just a very unique thing that they allow, they being the government, allows money from an IRA to go to a CRT to then go to a donor advised fund. Because you cannot, folks, during your lifetime, as a QCD, qualified charitable distribution, you cannot take money out of your IRA as a QCD and give it to a donor advised fund. You can't do it during life, but you can do it at death. You can take money when you die from your IRA and give it to a donor advised fund. And again, those donor advised funds can be set up as an endowment, can be set up as a, what is it called, Pete? Not a donor advised fund, but rich folk like Bill Gates created. What does he call it?
Private foundation.
Private foundation. You could create your own mini private foundation without having to be Bill Gates. You can do it through a donor advised fund. So do keep that in mind. Even though the money ultimately goes to charity, if you think very creatively, you can keep, especially if you're trying to benefit your children, but you could then create something at your children's death that your grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren could all become part of. It can become an endowment, almost like a private foundation that goes on forever. And you've specified who can get the money, or you can make it very liberal, anyone, or certain churches or certain schools or certain charitable groups. Did I miss anything on that, Pete?
No, I think you did a great job. The other choice, of course, is any other public charity. Someone has an alma mater they want to donate to and leave that as the remainder interest in the charitable remainder trust. They can do that too. But if they want to retain control, and I like the idea and concept of having the family involved into the future by using a donor advised fund. I like those a lot and have recommended them quite often.
Now, could they theoretically leave it to their favorite podcast host at the death of the beneficiaries?
I'm assuming that's not you because you wouldn't ask a question like that, I'm sure. But the short answer is no.
No, you cannot leave it to a person, folks, even your favorite podcast host. Has to go to a charity. Keep that in mind. But that's the concepts of it, folks. Hopefully it makes sense. To me, if your beneficiaries are younger than 40, you might want to look at other options. If they're older than 40, this can help provide the stretch out. Do keep in mind, it does ultimately go to charity, but as I've said and Pete has confirmed, it can go to a donor advised fund and keep the family involved. One big downside to this, in addition to the cost, Stretch IRA used to be, quote unquote, for free. It was part of the law. Here you have to hire people like Pete to put all this legal paperwork together.
Well, I don't view that as a downside myself.
I'm sure you don't. But Pete doesn't view it as a downside. He gets work out of it, or used to when he was working. Yeah. But yeah, there will be legal fees. You have to hire an attorney, and a good attorney who knows the rules, an attorney who's going to keep up to date on the rules and reach out to you if things have changed, to change the verbiage in your trusts and things like that. But yes, there is a setup cost on this. But I think the other big negative, folks, to keep in mind, there is no way your children can get a lump sum. The $2 million goes in there, but you're not going to be able to, or correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, could the children say, oh my goodness, I don't need $50,000 a year for the rest of my life. I need $600,000 today. I'm going to close this, take out my $600,000 net present value or something, charity can get the rest. Can the beneficiaries call it off and kind of figure out how much they're entitled to in a lump sum or not?
There is a provision that the CRT can be terminated. The beneficiary doesn't have unilateral ability to do that. They would have to get the consent of the charity, which obviously they'd probably give. They get the money sooner, and the trustee. So like anything else, they'd probably have to get judicial approval for the termination. So it's not as easy as it seems. There are situations where, from an economic standpoint, it would make some sense to do that. That is, for example, if it looks like the charitable remainder trust is going to be exhausted before it would normally expire, and everyone would like the charity to get some money out of it, they could terminate it and perhaps rectify that slightly. But the beneficiary doesn't have that option unilaterally.
Okay. And the other, well, I guess that is the main negative, not another negative. It's the inability to get the lump sum. They get an income stream, but they're not going to have the lump sum. Now, you don't have to leave all $2 million into the CRT. You can put some in and leave some to the children as a lump sum inheritance, or do what I prefer, and that would be to marry the CRT strategy to a second-to-die guaranteed universal life policy strategy, where at the death of the second spouse, a lump sum payment of life insurance proceeds goes to the children and preferably goes into a trust for the benefit of the children. But because it is, and these can be children in their 40s, 50s, 60s, it could be older adult children. But because the money is coming from life insurance, it is not going to be taxed as income when going into the trust. So there are none of that high trust tax issues. Instead, the life insurance proceeds pay out to the benefit of the children income tax free. And if the life insurance was held inside an irrevocable life insurance trust, it will also be estate tax free. So you could leave $2 million in a CRT estate tax free and another $2 million as proceeds from a life insurance policy, also estate tax free and income tax free. Remember, the CRT payments will not be income tax free. They will retain the taxation of when they got paid out of the IRA. So when they're received by your kids, they'll be taxed as income. It's just going to be a small amount over the rest of their life instead of a massive amount over 10 years. But the life insurance, income tax-free, at least under current laws, and estate tax-free if held in an ILIT, at least under current laws, ILIT being irrevocable life insurance trust. So just a way that you can marry the two so the children get this lump sum $2 million and a lifetime stream of income. They get the best of both worlds. And because that $2 million life insurance is in a trust, it's protected from bankruptcy and creditors and ex-spouses and business associates who want to sue them for something that they may or may not have done. It can be all protected inside a trust. So that is just, I think, a wonderful way of looking at it. And I don't know what you see in your business, Pete, but marrying a second-to-die universal life policy to a CRT, to me, is a really good strategy. Did I miss anything on that?
No. The concept behind it is you have taken this remainder interest that would otherwise go to the kids outright, and giving it to a charity. So very often the life insurance is purchased to replace that. And that's why sometimes it's referred to as a wealth replacement trust, the life insurance trust, that is. I wanted to back up for a second, and we were talking about the attorney's fees for setting these up. A number of the public charities, typically the larger charities, have form CRTs that they're more than willing to make available to their donors no cost, in my experience. The downside to that is, first of all, you have to name that particular charity as the remainder beneficiary. And the other is that the terms of that trust are going to be their terms, which means they're probably the trustee and manage the trust and make sure that the payments are paid out and invest the assets. But that's available for those who want to avoid attorney's fees on it. But you lose the flexibility when you do that.
Oh, very good. All right. Mary.
What about Peter?
Chris, is there anything you want to add before? Well, remember when I called you Paul Pete? And I blew that bet with Bob?
Yep. That was a classic show.
Damn it. That was not classic.
That's in the archives as a classic.
I flew into the sun on that show. I got a little cocky at the end. Mm-hmm. You know what I think it is? It's Peter, Paul, and Mary. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I keep calling you Paul instead of Peter.
That shows
I don't
your
know
age,
who Mary
Jim.
Is. All right. But anyways, Chris.
Yes.
Anything you want to add before we get to the questions?
Well, hopefully the questions are short because we're already at an hour.
All right. Well, I think, Pete, you went on and on and on and on and on so
as
long.
As I typically do.
As you typically do. It's like Pete. Paul. Chris. Not Paul. Pete. Don't get me going with the names. You guys are going to get me in trouble. We went long, folks, but we're going to do we're going to do a Q&A show. The very next Q&A show will be the questions on CRTs that we had. And this EDU show, even though we intended to get to the questions, I think we spent enough time trying to show you or teach you guys the basics. Now you have a good understanding of how these CRT strategies will work, recognizing there's deeper nuances we didn't get into. But for the most part, you got a good 101, CRT 101 EDU show today. We'll get to the five questions on the very next Q&A show. We convinced Pete to stay for that show that we will record as well before he goes on hiatus and never comes on the show again. But he will now do the questions on the next EDU show. Hopefully you guys found this interesting and beneficial as a potential substitute for the lost stretch IRA.
Perfect. So thanks, everybody. We'll close out real quick here, and we're going to turn around and record that Q&A show. So we're going to do it immediately, but you're going to listen to it with a few days in between. We realize that. But thanks for sticking with us, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.